Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak for Monday, March 14th, 2022. Coming up this hour,
Russia increases its aerial attacks on western areas closer to Ukraine's border with Poland.
The U.S. and China will hold their first high-level in-person talk since the war began.
Another Wall Street firm cuts its S&P 500 target.
And the Fed's expected to raise interest rates this week.
The NYPD is looking for a suspect who fatally attacked homeless men who were sleeping in the streets. Plus, North Korea may test an ICBM as soon as this week. I'm Mike LaBarre. More ahead.
I'm John Stashower in sports. Tom Brady's retirement is over. He's back with Tampa Bay. The Yankees made a big trade. The Nets beat the Knicks.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak. On Bloomberg 1130 New York, Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 1061 Boston, Bloomberg 960 San Francisco, Sirius XM 119, and around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business App.
And good morning, I'm Karen Moscow.
And I'm John Tucker. Bloomberg Daybreak being brought to you by Interactive Brokers Simple, IBKR Global Trader App. Deposit in your local currency. Trade stocks in the U.S., Europe, and Asia. Start your free trial at IBKR.com/globaltrader.
And it is 6:01 on Wall Street, and we check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. And futures are higher this morning. S&P futures up 46 points, Dow futures up 394, NASDAQ futures up 115, 10-year Treasury down 29 32nds, the yield 2.09%, and the yield on the 2-year 1.81%, NYMEX crude oil is down 5.2%. John.
Karen, we're going to have more on the markets in a minute, but first, negotiators from Russia and Ukraine are set to hold more talks today after a weekend where Moscow increased its aerial attacks on western areas closer to Ukraine's border with Poland. Meanwhile, U.S. officials say Russia has asked China for military assistance for its war in Ukraine. Bloomberg's Amy Morris has more from our 99.1 newsroom in Washington.
It appears Vladimir Putin has faced more setbacks than he expected in the war with Ukraine. One U.S. official tells Bloomberg the request for aid from China isn't new, but did not say what kind of equipment Moscow is asking for. This, as Pentagon spokesman John Kirby tells ABC's This Week, the U.S. continues to back Ukraine.
We're going to continue to flow security assistance to them. The kinds of things we know they most need, the kinds of things that they're using so well, we're going to continue to help get them into their hands.
Meanwhile, Russia attacked a military base that acts as a hub for cooperation between Ukraine and NATO countries. That raises the possibility the alliance could be drawn into the fight. In Washington, I'm Amy Morris, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Amy, thank you. The U.S. and China will hold the first high-level in-person talk since Russia's full invasion of Ukraine. We get more from Bloomberg's Stephen Engel in Hong Kong.
The National Security Advisor, Jake Sullivan, will be meeting face-to-face with Yang Jiechi. He is China's top diplomat. He is a top-ranking official on the Politburo. So they are raising, the level of contact because the White House, while stopping short of, outright condemning Beijing's neutral stance, they're trying to court Beijing's efforts to, wield its influence on Moscow to, A, enforce the sanctions and as well, of course, ultimately help persuade Vladimir Putin to end his war in Ukraine.
Bloomberg's Stephen Engel says the meeting will take place in Rome.
Russian prosecutors reportedly are threatening U.S. companies such as McDonald's, Yum Brands, and IBM for criticizing the government there or pulling out of the country. According to the Wall Street Journal, assets could be seized or corporate leaders could be targeted for arrest.
Well, John, Allianz chief economic advisor Mohammed Alarian said the economic fallout from a Russian President Vladimir Putin's full-scale invasion of Ukraine is likely to include a further pickup in U.S. inflation.
There will be a Putin inflation component. I estimate that at 7.9%, we will probably get very close or above 10% before we come down. And that difference will be all because of the disruption that Putin's war imply for commodity prices, supply chains, and shipments.
Mohammed Alarian, who is also a Bloomberg contributor, made the comments on CBS's Face the Nation, which can be heard Sundays on Bloomberg Radio.
Inflation is a key reason why investors expect the Federal Reserve to begin raising interest rates this week. Let's get more from Bloomberg's Vinny Del Giudice.
The Fed meets Tuesday and Wednesday, and central bankers have signaled they'll lift rates after a big cut to near zero at the start of the pandemic in March 2020. Americans are losing ground to inflation, and that's putting a big dent in consumer confidence, lows going back to the financial crisis more than a decade ago. Data Tuesday on February wholesale prices could show a year-over-year gain of 10%. Other economic reports this week, retail sales and industrial production could point to moderating economic growth across the U.S. Vinny Darrell, Judice, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Right, Vinny, thank you. Well, higher interest rates, a commodity crunch, and the war has one Wall Street firm cutting its stock targets once again. We get the latest live from Bloomberg's Renita Young. Good morning, Renita.
Good morning, Karen. Goldman Sachs strategists are lowering their S&P 500 target for the second time in a month, this time from 4,900 to 4,700. The index closed at just above 4,200 on Friday. It comes as the global commodity crunch triggered by Russia's invasion of Ukraine deepened the slump in U.S. stocks. Last month, Goldman cut its initial year-end target of 5,100 points for the S&P 500. Live in New York, I'm Renita Young, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Thanks, Renita. A huge sell-off overnight in tech stocks in Asia. Let's get the recap from Bloomberg's Juliet Sally in Singapore. Good morning, Juliet.
Good morning, John and Karen. A plunge of as much as 8.5% in a gauge of Chinese tech firms listed in Hong Kong reverberated around the region, leaving the MSCI Asia Pacific Index in the red for a second session. A COVID lockdown in Shenzhen, which is a tech hub, added to geopolitical and regulatory risks facing the sector. A Bloomberg intelligence gauge tracking Macau gaming and casino stocks slumped as much as 9% to a record low as China placed the southern city into lockdown. And elsewhere, a weaker yen saw the Nikkei 225 gain 0.6% in Tokyo. In Singapore, Juliet Sali, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Juliet, thank you. Well, Bitcoin, Ether, and Dogecoin got a quick boost today after Elon Musk tweeted that he owns the digital tokens and is not planning to sell. Bitcoin, which has fallen almost 3% before Musk's tweet, right now is trading at $39,107. That's up about 1.1%. Futures also higher. S&P futures up 43 points. Dow futures up 372. NASDAQ futures up 110. Straight ahead, your latest local headlines, plus a check of sports. And this is Bloomberg.
All right, thanks, Karen. 607 on Wall Street, and time to bring in Michael Barr to find out what else is going on in New York and around the world.
John, thank you very much, sir. Police say they are searching for a man who is believed to have attacked multiple people who were sleeping on the streets in New York City and Washington, D.C., killing two of his victims and injuring three others. D.C. police said that they are working with the NYPD to find the man who fatally shot and stabbed a man in the district and killed another man Saturday in New York City. New York Mayor Eric Adams says a city task force would focus on finding homeless people in the subways and other locations and urge them to take refuge at city-owned shelters.
We're going to take extra steps to encourage individuals to go into the shelters for safety reasons as well as the current weather condition.
Mayor Adams says this is a clear case of how there are too many illegal guns on the streets. New York City police say they have identified the man who they say stabbed two employees of the Museum of Modern Art. A video released by police shows a man identified as 60-year-old Gary Cabana entering the museum lobby through a revolving door, then climbing onto the desk and leaping over it before cornering the two employees and stabbing them. Authorities say the employees suffered non-life-threatening injuries. North Korea could reportedly launch an ICBM as soon as this week. That's according to the Yonhap News Agency. It would be its most serious provocation in 5 years. New York City Health Commissioner Dave Chosky is talking about the mental health toll from the spread of COVID-19. Dr. Chosky says that even members of his own family struggled emotionally due to the impact from the coronavirus.
Many people have not actually been asked about, but then when you do, there is this opening up that occurs because so many people have felt disconnected in some way.
Dr. Chosky plans on stepping down today. A ceremony will be held to mark his last day as New York City's health commissioner. Former President Barack Obama has announced that he has COVID-19. He says outside of a scratchy throat, he feels fine. Oscar-winning actor William Hurt has died at age 71. His films include Broadcast News and The Big Chill. Hurt's son said in a statement that his father died of natural causes. Global News, 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg. John.
Michael, thank you. And it's now 6:09 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg Sports Update. Here's John Stenshauer.
John, that was quick. Tom Brady retired on February 1st, 40 days later. Changed his mind. Said in a statement, that time will come, but it's not now. My place is on the field, not in the stands. He's 44. Not as if he can't play anymore. Just had a terrific season with Tampa Bay, and now he'll play a third season with the Bucs after 20 in New England. In Tampa, the Yankees just held their first official team workout, then made a big trade with the Minnesota Twins. Sent packing Gary Sanchez, the Yanks' starting catcher since 2017, and Gio Urshela, their starting third baseman the last three seasons. The Yanks acquired a new left side of the infield, veteran third baseman Josh Donaldson, and shortstop Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, 26-year-old, was a Gold Glove-winning third baseman with Texas in 2020. They moved him to shortstop last season. The Rangers traded him to the Twins on Saturday, and the next day the Twins shipped him to the Yanks. Nets beat the Knicks 110-107. Kevin Durant scored 53 points. The unvaccinated Kyrie Irving not allowed to play home games, but he was at the Barclays Center sitting in the stands. That led KD to reach out to New York City Mayor Eric Adams.
Like I said, Eric, you gotta figure something out, man, because you know, it's looking crazy, especially on national TV, and he can come to the game but not play. Like, come on, man. Hey, yo, Eric.
The mayor has said since some city workers lost their jobs for not getting the vaccine, Irving should not get special treatment. Islanders beat the Ducks 4-3. NCAA tournament field announced. Rutgers will play Notre Dame on Wednesday. Seton Hall takes on TCU on Friday. John Stashower, Bloomberg Sports. John?
All right, thanks, John. And ahead of the cash open on Wall Street, futures in the U.S. in the green right now. Dow futures of 342 points. S&P futures 39 points higher. And the NASDAQ futures right now up 93 points. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. And just ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak, an update on the war in Ukraine. Some key developments this morning. We'll debrief Bloomberg's End of Current. This is Bloomberg.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business App, and at Bloomberg Quick Take. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. Stocks in Europe are climbing along with U.S. stock index futures as negotiators from Russia and Ukraine prepare for a new round of talks. A global bond route deepening with the yields on the 5- and 10-year Treasury rising to their highest since 2019. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures up about 40 points. Dow futures up 346. NASDAQ futures up 97. The DAX in Germany is up 2.8%. 10-year Treasury down 26 32nds. Yield 2.08%. The yield on the 2-year 1.81%. NYMEX crude oil is down 4.8% on $5.25 at $104.08 a barrel. COMEX gold is down 0.9% or $17.50 at $19.67.50 an ounce. The euro 1.0975 against the dollar. British pound 1.3049. The yen is at 117.94. And Bitcoin this morning up about 1% at $39,060. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Karen, thank you very much. Russia's military forces are keeping up their campaign to capture Ukraine's capital as residents of other besieged cities hold out hope that renewed diplomatic talks might open the way for more civilians to evacuate or emergency supplies to reach them. A day after expanding the war in Ukraine with an airstrike on a military base close to the Polish border, Russian forces fired artillery on suburbs north and east of Kyiv. NFL superstar Tom Brady announced that his short-lived retirement is over. Brady posted on Instagram that he will return for a 23rd season with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. In baseball, a big trade for the Yankees. They have acquired former AL MVP Josh Donaldson, shortstop Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, and backup catcher Ben Roethlisberger from the Minnesota Twins for catcher Gary Sanchez and third baseman Gio Urshela. Global News, 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, John.
All right, Michael, thank you very much. 6:20 on Wall Street. We're live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak. A couple of key developments this morning in the war in Ukraine. The U.S. says Russia sought Chinese military aid for the war, and an aide to President Biden is going to meet with China's top diplomat today. Joining us now for the update, Enda Curran, the chief Asia economics correspondent for Bloomberg. Hey, Enda, always good to talk to you. Explain to me the relationship between Russia and China. Does Russia need China more than China needs Russia?
Well, they've both been growing a trade relationship in recent years. China, of course, a big importer of energy from Russia. Russia, of course, a big importer of merchandise goods. That trade has led to more broader strategic cooperation and close alliance between the two countries. And indeed, more recent years, President Xi and Putin are said to have developed a good rapport. And that's what culminated in a few weeks ago at the Winter Olympics, this communique between both countries that there was no limits to their friendship. So that's the backdrop. Those deepening economic and strategic ties are the backdrop to the bind that China is now in when it comes to Russia's invasion of the Ukraine. On the one hand, of course, China preaches that it respects sovereignty of nations and independence of nations, but it has yet to condemn this invasion outright or even use the word invasion. They're kind of trying to straddle both sides a bit. So that's why I think most people will be looking to these talks in Rome to see if it does lead to any kind of breakthrough on that front.
Yeah, that's likely to be chief on the agenda with those talks in Rome that are scheduled to take place today. What's the likelihood? You want to game the odds of China actually delivering aid in the form of military equipment to Russia?
Well, that's news coming out of Washington. Obviously, that would put the relations between both on a whole new level, given the context of the invasion. But even before we get to that, as I mentioned earlier, we have to see if China is going to double down on its hawkish language when it comes to Russia. As I say, most observers would say that's inconsistent with China's stance in the past. It kind of tries to be seen as a good global citizen, regardless of one's views of its internal political system. So there are question marks over China's stance on that. But then on a more micro level, there are question marks over will China observe the sanctions to the letter, will it ensure its companies aren't funneling either goods or finance to Russia. Most analysts would say China will want to observe those sanctions, but there's still an open question around that. And then, of course, there's a question around what role China looks to play, if it does look to play a role as a peace mediator. Again, as I said, it wants to see an end to the conflict and it wants to see peace there, but it hasn't put much by way of firm proposals on the table as to how it goes about that. Now, of course, to go back to your opening question, if we get to a point where Russia is, where China is supplying arms to Russia in the context of this invasion, that would mean, of course, all bets are off as China being an independent mediator.
But as a global citizen or a wannabe global citizen, China has a lot at stake here. It does have its trade initiatives, initiative with the European countries, Belt and Road Initiative. That's really at stake here, is it not? Is it at risk?
Well, the Belt and Road, you could argue, has probably lost some focus. It is President Xi Jinping's signature project, but I think it's kind of lost some focus in recent years when it comes to China's focus on overseas trade. It has been growing its trade at a fairly rapid clip throughout the pandemic with both Europe and the U.S., and I think what's at stake is a lot of goodwill might be too strong of a word, but China has certainly been keen to cozy up or build better relations with Europe, for example, build better relations with countries in Africa, build better relations with Latin America, as relations soured with the U.S. And there's a feeling that if this global alliance, such as it is, against Russia's action does maintain and does hold up, that will continue to put pressure on China and risks, perhaps, you know, decoupling or isolating China from pockets of the world economy. Now, all of this is high level. China remains deeply plugged in to the global economy. It's not going to be isolated in a way that Russia can be in the short term. But at the very least, I think a lot of people would say that China being seen to be on Russia's side in this conflict is damaging for its international standing.
And always a pleasure. Anna Curran, the Chief Asia Economics Correspondent for Bloomberg. As we look at the markets right now, ahead of the open in on Wall Street, Dow futures right now up 339 points. That's a rise of 1%. S&P futures 38 points higher. That's up 0.9%. And the NASDAQ E-mini futures right now up 90 points. That's a rise of 0.7%. And as we look to treasuries right now, the 10-year yield 2.09%. That's up 10 basis points this morning. The two-year yield at 1.82%. That is up 7 basis points. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. Daybreak brought to you by Audi. Don't let someone else drive off in the Audi model you've always wanted. Visit your tri-state area Audi dealer or get behind the wheel of yours today, or visit AudiOffers.com for more information.
Broadcasting live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studio in New York. Bloomberg 1130. To Washington, D.C. Bloomberg 991. To Boston, Bloomberg 1061. To San Francisco, Bloomberg 960. To the country, Sirius XM Channel 119. And around the globe, the Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
It's 6:30 on Wall Street. Good morning. I'm John Tucker.
And I'm Karen Moscow. We're just about 3 hours away from the open of U.S. trading. It's time for the five things you need to know to start your day, brought to you by Interactive Brokers. Interactive Brokers charges margin loan rates from 0.75% to 1.58%. Rates subject to change. Learn more at ibkr.com/compare. Up first, the United States plans to hold its first high-level in-person talks with China since Russia's invasion of Ukraine began. It comes as the U.S. says Russia has asked China for military equipment to support its invasion. Bloomberg's Ed Baxter has the story.
The U.S. says nobody should help replace Russian losses during the invasion. National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan heads to Rome today for high-level talks with China's top foreign policy official, Yang Jiechi. Meanwhile, Russia has shelled a Ukrainian military base 10 miles away from the border with Poland, and Sullivan says if anything lands in Poland, NATO will respond.
That the United States will work with our allies to defend every inch of NATO territory.
And he used the term full force reaction. In San Francisco, I'm Ed Baxter, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Thanks, Ed. Negotiators from Ukraine and Russia are set to speak today. The Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky hopes it will lead to a meeting between himself and Russian President Vladimir Putin.
Should then, no?
Representatives of our countries are holding daily talks via video conference. Our delegation has a clear task to do everything to arrange the meeting of the presidents. The meeting, I'm sure, people are waiting for.
Vladimir Zelensky says a path to talks with Putin is difficult but necessary.
Well, John, on Wall Street, higher interest rates, a commodity crunch, and the war has one firm cutting its stock targets once again. And we get the latest live from Bloomberg's Renita Young. Good morning, Renita.
Good morning, Karen. Goldman Sachs strategists are lowering their S&P 500 target for the second time in a month, this time from 4,900 to 4,700. The index closed at just above 4,200 on Friday. It comes as the global commodity crunch triggered by Russia's invasion of Ukraine deepened the slump in U.S. stocks. Last month, Goldman cut its initial year-end target of 5,100 points for the S&P 500. Live in New York, I'm Renita Young, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Thanks, Renita. Looking to curb inflation, the Fed expected to hike interest rates at this week's FOMC meeting. Chair Jerome Powell recently told lawmakers he'd recommend a quarter-point rate hike.
And John, Bitcoin, Ether, and Dogecoin all experienced brief gains following a tweet from billionaire Elon Musk, who said he is not planning to sell any of the digital tokens. And that's the five things you need to know to start your day, brought to you by Interactive Brokers.
All right, thanks, Karen. 6:33 on Wall Street. And time to bring in Michael Barr to tell us what else is going on in New York and around the world.
John, thank you very much, sir. Police in New York City are searching for a suspect they say shot and killed a homeless person and wounded another in separate attacks over the weekend. Both victims were sleeping when they were shot. New York Mayor Eric Adams.
Not committing a crime, but sleeping on the streets. A total abandonment and betrayal of trust for this action to have taken place in the manner that it did.
Mayor Adams announced a city task force would focus on finding homeless people in the subways and other locations and urged them to take sleep in city-owned shelters. North Korea could launch an intercontinental ballistic missile as soon as this week. The Yonhap News Agency cited unidentified South Korean government officials. It would be its most serious provocation in 5 years. Gasoline thefts are on the rise. In Houston, for example, police are looking for thieves who stole about 1,000 gallons of diesel fuel from an underground storage tank of a family-owned gas station. Station manager Jerry Thayil says surveillance video recorded the thieves pulling up in a van over the lids of the station's underground storage tanks.
The van drives on top of the fuel tank. That's all you see. No one comes out. They have a trap door inside their vehicle, which is crazy.
Station manager Jerry Thayil says the thieves struck 3 times last week and were chased off during a 4th robbery attempt. Former President Barack Obama says he has tested positive for COVID. Obama says outside of a scratchy throat, he is feeling fine otherwise. New York City Health Commissioner Dave Chachki is winding down his time in office. A walkout ceremony will be held today at the Department of Health in Long Island City to mark Dr. Chachki's last day as health commissioner. Yesterday, he talked about the mental health toll from the spread of COVID-19. Dr. Chachki says he knows people personally who have gone through issues.
I saw it with my patients. I saw it in my own family, you know, in terms of the effects of isolation.
Dr. Chachki says the World Health Organization reported earlier this month that the global prevalence of anxiety and depression increased by 25% during the first year of the crisis. And Oscar-winning actor William Hurt has died. His many films include Broadcast News and The Big Chill. Hurt's son said his father died of natural causes at age 71. Global News, 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take. Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts, more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, John.
Michael, thank you. It's now 6:36 on Wall Street. That's time for the Bloomberg Sports Update. Once again, here's John Stashower.
John, it's not as if Tom Brady's the first athlete to change their mind about retirement. Brett Favre did it a few times. Several boxers have done it. Usually the retirement lasts a little longer for Brady, a 40-day retirement. So much for wanting to spend more time at home. He's back with Tampa Bay at age 44, coming off statistically one of his best seasons. He said in a statement, "My place is on the field, not in the stands." The Yankees didn't make any moves before the lockout. Now that it's over, big trade with the Minnesota Twins. They traded catcher Gary Sanchez. He made a big splash with his power back in 2017, but his average fell all the way down to 147 a couple years ago, never strong defensively. Gio Urshela was terrific defensively at third base, but he was also dealt in return. Yanks get 36-year-old third baseman Josh Donaldson, one-time AL MVP back in 2015. He bounced around in recent years, and the Yanks also acquired 26-year-old shortstop Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, who the Twins had just acquired Saturday from Texas. They also get a young catcher, Ben Wartville. In Brooklyn, Nets beat the Knicks 110-107. Kevin Durant scored 53 points and then wondered why Kyrie Irving wasn't allowed to play, considering Irving was at the game, sitting in the stands.
It's ridiculous. I don't understand it at all. I mean, there's a few people in our arena that's unvaxxed, right? Like, they lifted all of that in our arena, right? So what's the, I don't get it.
Irving still only playing road games. Islanders ended their 6-game homestand with a third straight win, 4-3 over Anaheim. NCAA tournament, Rutgers got in, but has to play a first 4-game Wednesday against Notre Dame. John Stashower, Bloomberg Sports. John.
All right, John, thanks a lot. Coming up on 6:38 on Wall Street, and it's that time of the day to take a look at some of the stocks that and the names that are moving in the pre-market. For that, we're joined by Bloomberg Radio and TV Markets correspondent Kriti Gupta. This on a morning, Kriti, when looks like a rally, at least as far as the futures are concerned at this point in the morning.
Yeah, a fairly broad rally, we should say. But if you look under the hood at what's on the downside, it's actually falling oil prices lower. We know that there's that correlation or inverse correlation, inverse relationship between oil prices and stocks. We do have oil prices down. I'm looking at Brent crude here, about 108.41. It tends to take down those American stocks as well that actually specialize or focus in on that American production. So, for example, your worst performer this morning is going to be Occidental. OXY is your ticker, down 4.6%. Your next 5-6 stocks in the red are going to be oil stocks as well. So once again, following that move that you're seeing in the commodities market, Marathon up Oil, MRO, down just shy of 3%. Chevron as well. CVX is your ticker, just down 2.5%. A similar story for Halliburton, down 2%. HAL is your ticker. Remember, these were the best performers the last couple of weeks, just given the geopolitical tensions and the idea that Russian barrels are coming off the market. This, of course, not compared to some of the better movers, excuse me, that you're seeing. You are seeing a lot of those travel stocks higher, which once again have been doing the exact opposite of those oil stocks. Delta, for example, DAL is your ticker, up 2.5%. Carnival Cruise Line, CCL, up 2.4%. American as well, AAL is your ticker there, up 2.4% as well. But remember, these aren't just travel names. This isn't necessarily a recovery story. It's also a volatility story. If you're betting on more volatility in the markets, those are the names you're going to play it through.
Okay. The supply chain issues, they haven't gone away, have they? In particular for a company like Apple, right?
They have not gone away. Now you have some news coming out overnight that the Foxconn plant in Shenzhen is getting shut down. The production is being halted for iPhones. But remember, Apple shares
That's the biggest supplier, the manufacturer for
Apple.
Yes,
Apple's the biggest iPhones. 60% of their revenue comes from Apple. They are trying to diversify that a little bit on Apple with some other companies, but nevertheless, the question was, if you start to see the shutdown, does it impact Apple stock? Excuse me, AAPL is your ticker. Now flat on the day. The reason it isn't plunging is because most of their supply chain actually comes out of Taipei, comes out of Taiwan, not necessarily Shenzhen. And Foxconn has already said they're actually addressing that moves, perhaps boosting production in some of their other plants.
Hi, Kriti. Always a pleasure. Thanks very much. See you tomorrow. Bloomberg Radio and TV Markets correspondent Kriti Gupta. And as we look at the futures right now, Dow futures, they are up 345 points right now, 1% rise. The S&P E-mini futures, 38 points higher. That is up 0.9%. The NASDAQ futures right now up 88 points, a rise of 0.7%. 10-year yield in the U.S., 2.07%. That's up 8 basis points. The 2-year yield, 1.81%. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. And the Bloomberg weather for today from Rob Carroll. Morning clouds giving way to sunshine. The high temperature in the mid-50s. Tomorrow, sunny, mild, by 60 to 65. Wednesday's outlook, sunshine. The high temperature near 60.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business App, and at Bloomberg Quick Take. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow, and futures are higher this morning. We get to the first word breaking news desk for today's morning call, and here's Bill Maloney. Bill, good morning. All right, and futures, we'll be checking in with Bill a little later, having some connection problems here. Right now, futures again higher. S&P futures up 37 points. Dow futures up 337. NASDAQ futures up 82. The DAX in Germany is up 2.8%. The 10-year Treasury down 25, 30 seconds. The yield 2.08%. The yield on the 2-year 1.81%. NYMEX crude oil is down 4.8% on $5.25 at $104.08 a barrel. COMEX gold is down 1% or $20.10 at $19.64.90 an ounce. The euro 1.0962 against the dollar. British pound 1.3037. The yen is at 118.01. And Bitcoin this morning up 0.9% at $39,030. And that's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Thank you very much, Karen. U.S. officials say Russia has asked China for military assistance for its war in Ukraine. A spokesman for China's foreign ministry rejected the reports today as disinformation and malicious. NFL superstar Tom Brady announced that his short-lived retirement is over. Brady posted on Instagram he believes his time isn't over yet on the field and will return with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And a huge trade in baseball, a big trade for the Yankees. They have acquired former AL MVP Josh Donaldson, shortstop Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, and backup catcher Ben Roethlisberger from the Minnesota Twins for catcher Gary Sanchez and third baseman Gio Urshela. Global news 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts, more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg.
The following commentary is from Bloomberg Opinion.
A mysteriously large chunk of Gen Z isn't working. I'm Justin Fox, a columnist for Bloomberg Opinion. Despite spectacular job growth over the past year plus, the U.S. labor force participation rate is still 1.1 percentage points, about 1.8 million people, short of where it was on the eve of the pandemic in February 2020. The retirement of many 65 and older Americans who had stayed in the labor force until COVID-19 is one big, easy-to-understand factor. Less clear is why there continues to be such a participation gap among young adults. 16 and 17-year-olds are more likely to be in the labor force than before the pandemic, but those 18 through 29, much less so. The total shutdown of spring and summer 2020 may have been so disruptive for those finishing their educations and entering the job market that it's taking a long time for them to catch up. I'm Justin Fox. For more opinion, please go to Bloomberg.com/opinion or OPIN Go on the Bloomberg Terminal.
This has been Bloomberg Opinion.
And Bloomberg Opinion commentaries can be heard every weekday at this time, and terminal customers can read more at OPIN Go. It is 6:50 on Wall Street. Let's turn to news and science and technology now with a Bloomberg NJIT STEM report. It is brought to you by New Jersey Institute of Technology, ranked in the top 2% nationally for alumni mid-career earnings and number one in the nation for student upward economic mobility. More at njit.edu. And now here's us making news in science, technology, engineering, and math. Former President Barack Obama says he had tested positive for the coronavirus, though he's feeling relatively healthy. The former president says he and his wife have been vaccinated and boosted. He encouraged more Americans to get vaccinated against the coronavirus despite the declining infection rate in the U.S. China has placed the 17.5 million people of the city of Shenzhen into lockdown for at least a week. They've been told to stay home and will undergo three rounds of coronavirus tests. That came after virus cases nationwide doubled to nearly 3,400. Apple supplier Foxconn is halting production at its Shenzhen sites, one of which makes iPhones. And Pfizer's COVID pill is unlikely to reach most of the world for a year. The United Nations-backed medicines patent pool plans to name the generic drug makers that are going to be making the pills next week, 4 months after reaching a licensing accord with Pfizer. The drug companies may be ready to supply the first pills by December, but analytics firm Airfinity says large quantities may only reach the market in May of 2023. And that's a Bloomberg NJIT STEM report. John.
All right, thanks, Karen. We are live from the Bloomberg Interactive Broker Studios, where it is now 6:51 on Wall Street. Time now to check what's going on in D.C. Some of the top stories in our nation's capital include the U.S. officials saying Russia has asked China for military assistance for its war in Ukraine. The U.S. and China will hold the first high-level in-person talk since Russia's full invasion. And as far as Iran nuclear talks, they're taking a short break. And President Biden urged to invoke Cold War powers to blunt the energy price hike. Let's take a deeper dive into some of these stories this morning with Bloomberg government reporter Emily Wilkins. Emily, give us the update on what's happening with the talks to try and end Russia's invasion of Ukraine and the war there. They're asking for military assistance from China. At least that's according to U.S. officials. What more do we know?
So at this point, we don't have a lot of details from U.S. officials about exactly what Russia has gone to Beijing for, but it's definitely been an alliance that the U.S. has kept a very close eye on. And now the U.S. is starting to suggest to Beijing that, you know, if they do want to try to help Russia, there could be sanctions and further punishments for them as well. Of course, a lot of that is sort of yet to be determined. We're going to see what comes out of this official meeting between Jake Sullivan, the White House National Security Advisor, who's going to be meeting with his counterpart in China today. And it's certainly what has gone on between Beijing and Moscow was going to be a discussion. How much did Chinese officials know about Putin's planned invasion of Ukraine ahead of time? We've seen China really take this interesting stance when it comes to Russia. Diplomatically, they've still been supportive of Russia. They've still backed Russia. But they've also heard them say, you know, mention Ukraine, sort of to support Ukraine, say that they want to see peace in the region again. So it's not fully clear at this point what Beijing is thinking in terms of lending assistance to Putin. But certainly we're going to be keeping a close eye on these talks today.
Are those talks taking place in Rome between the U.S. and their Chinese counterparts? On another front in Iran, particularly important when it comes to the energy markets, the nuclear talks are ongoing, but we're told there's a short break. Is there an impasse?
Well, Iranian officials have come out and said that, you know, the negotiations are done, that there's just a bit of a break right now, as you mentioned. And of course, this comes as Russia has really upended the talks with demands on the West as far as their sanctions on Moscow over the Ukraine invasion. So this conflict in Ukraine, it's now impacting these other policies internationally. The European Union coordinator, Joseph Borrell, said on Friday that he was still going to talk to the U.S. and Iran and other teams to overcome the current situation. But he also said on Twitter that a final text is essentially ready and on the table. So it sounds like all sides kind of want these talks to continue. Of course, there's just the question of what, you know, Russia is going to wind up agreeing or not agreeing to.
Okay, and finally, the president being urged to invoke some Cold War powers to try and end the surge in energy prices here in the U.S. What are these powers? How likely is the administration going to go through with this?
Yeah, well, the idea is it's called the Defense Production Act. And if it sounds familiar, it's because it's the same act that Donald Trump used to spur mass production when the coronavirus was first identified and was spreading across the U.S. And so this is something that the government can use to really sort of help companies bolster production. In this case, the Biden administration is being called on to bolster that production for oil companies. At this point, though, the administration's not really on board. Remember, Biden came in really touting climate change, clean energy. We had White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki saying that invoking the act would be basically providing money to oil companies to do something they already have the capacity to do. Oil companies have said that they do need additional help to produce more gas, and definitely we'll keep an eye on this throughout the week.
Bloomberg's Emily Wilkins. You can follow all the latest on Bloomberg Radio in Washington, Bloomberg 99.1 and 105.7 FM HD2. Karen.
56 on Wall Street. This is Bloomberg Daybreak. In March is Women's History Month, and every day this month, we're celebrating significant moments in women's history. Now, with your installment for March 14th, here's Bloomberg's Renita Young.
On this day in women's history in 1969, Barbara Jo Rubin becomes the first female jockey to win a race against men at a nationally recognized racetrack in the United States. She piloted Bravey Galaxy to victory in front of a packed grandstand at Aqueduct Racetrack in New York. About a month earlier that year, Rubin also made history as the first female jockey to win an American Parimutuel race while she was in West Virginia. When Rubin was 6 years old, she was diagnosed with polio and began riding shortly after as a form of exercise and to help strengthen her legs. She made her competitive debut in Nassau, Bahamas at the Hobby Horse Hall track. She made big waves as a rookie, but her career was cut short by injuries after 89 mounts. That's today in women's history. I'm Renita Young, Bloomberg Radio.
All right, Renita, thank you. And again, futures this morning are higher. S&P futures up 40 points. Dow futures up 364 and NASDAQ futures up 88. 10-year Treasury down 23/32, yield 2.07%. And Bloomberg surveillance is straight ahead. For John Tucker, I'm Karen Moscow, and this is Bloomberg.